So I want to explore this quality of the mind, this quality of consciousness called Shraddha. And probably many of you have heard talk about Shraddha before, so it's probably not completely unfamiliar. And what I was saying in the tea break is in a way the basis of what I want to start off by talking about. If you didn't hear me in the tea break, what I was saying was that in consciousness, innate in consciousness, in all human consciousness, there's a capacity for this quality of Shraddha. And you could say that Shraddha is our capacity to respond to value. It's our capacity to respond to value. And I want to explore this because it seems to me, well it is, not just to me, it seems that it's a prerequisite, it's a necessary condition to have, to be in touch with Shraddha if we're going to let go into spiritual death. I think without Shraddha, when we have an experience of spiritual death, without Shraddha, it just becomes frightening or painful or bleak. All there is a dropping away of everything that's familiar that we want to hold on to in our identity. Whereas with Shraddha, that letting go turns into something liberating, turns into something where meaning can break through, value can suddenly break through. So Shraddha, or a capacity to respond to meaning and value, a capacity to be receptive to meaning and value, is one of the necessary conditions if we're going to have a positive experience of spiritual death. And if it's not a positive experience, it's not spiritual death. Do you see what I mean? You can let go all you like. You can go on the most extreme diet, and it's not spiritual death unless it has a liberating effect on your mind. So this quality of responding, this capacity to respond to value, it can manifest in different ways, and it can manifest in different spheres. So one way, or one sphere that it manifests in, is the aesthetic sphere. So when we respond to beauty, or when we experience something as beautiful, that's this faculty becoming active. It's there in potential. When we have an experience of beauty, that's this faculty becoming active in the aesthetic sphere. But also, it's not limited to the aesthetic sphere. When we respond to virtue, when we respond to somebody being kind, or somebody being noble, or somebody being generous, or whatever the virtue is, there's something in us that sometimes is moved by that. There's something that just can't help but be attracted by an act of kindness, of a courage, of generosity, of love, of honesty, of nobility. We're all moved to some degree or another. At least we're moved unless we can have a sort of cynical undercutting of that. But I don't want to... I'll come on to that. In potential, we're moved by virtue. And that also, that capacity to be moved, when we are moved by virtue, is Shraddha. Yeah? And I mean virtue in other people. I know that we can all be kind. I can sometimes be kind. But if I'm moved by my own kindness, it's not quite Shraddha. It sort of turns into something else. Oh, how kind I was. Somehow loses the point. Yeah? So it's normally a capacity to respond to virtue in others. And then the third sphere which this quality kind of manifests in is a response to truth, when there's when we encounter something true, and it could just be somebody speaking the truth, or it could be that we encounter the truth in some other way. But when we encounter something that's true, even if it's not necessarily pleasant, something in us responds with a yes, this is true. Yes, this is real. Yeah. So when at one of these classes you hear me or Subhadramati or somebody say, we're all going to die, if there's a response of yes, this is true, and yes, this is important, then that's a response of Shraddha. Yeah? That's us sort of saying, yes, there's an innate response. And it's a sort of knowing. When you respond to beauty or virtue or truth in this way, it's not a reasoned thing. It's not like you're saying, oh yes, there's this sunset, or there's this beautiful waterfall, I should be moved now, let me try. It's not like that. It's immediate, and it's a sort of knowing. It's a heart knowing. Yeah. So Buddhism has an analysis of Shraddha, and I'm going to take you through some of that analysis in a moment. But the first thing that I want to say is that it's not a quality that is easily translated into English terms. One way of translating it is confidence, trust. Confidence and trust. Another way of translating it is faith. But none of those words quite get at the full range and breadth and nuances of Shraddha, and also those words can lead to a misunderstanding. Sometimes what we think of as faith isn't what Shraddha is. Sometimes what we think of as confidence isn't what Shraddha is. There's a great deal of sort of a whole industry in developing self-confidence, isn't there? Sort of psychological self-confidence. It's no bad thing, really, really good thing, but it's not quite the same as Shraddha. Yeah. So Shraddha sort of isn't sort of just summed up by any of those words, even though it's often translated in that way, in those terms. So yes, I'm going to try and sort of get underneath what it is. In the first half, I was asking you to recall an experience where you felt in touch with meaning, in touch with value. Did you manage to feel something of that experience? Were you able to connect? So there's some nods. Yeah. And what did it feel like when you were able, those of you who were able to connect? What's it like?
Better.
Ah, that's interesting. So say a bit more. Can you say anything?
For me, metta always feels like an extremely warm, confident feeling I have inside. In a sense of my own stability.
Yeah.
And it almost like, in a positive way, untouchable.
Yeah. Like there's a robustness to it, isn't it, that can't be shaken because you're in touch with something of value and that's real. Mm. Yeah, that's interesting, because sometimes people think of metta as being somehow weak, but actually it makes you strong. Mm. Yeah. So what's also interesting is that metta and Shraddha are intimately linked. So you could say that when we're in touch with metta, when there's metta in our experience, and then we encounter something of beauty or value or truth, that metta naturally turns into Shraddha. So it's metta plus this sense of value turns into Shraddha. Yeah? So metta is very, very closely linked. It's the basis, if you see what I mean, of Shraddha. when metta meets something higher, it turns into shraddha. Yeah. Any other thoughts about what it felt like for you to be in touch with that? Yeah.
So for me, it felt like an affirmation that sort of I'm doing the right thing, so I'm on the right path.
Yes.
Like you said, with constant sort of this has meaning.
But, yes.
And not in a cognitive way.
Yeah.
But it's just like knowing this is the right thing to do. This
yes.
This is what I'm meant to be right yes. at this point in time.
Yes. Yes. And I think that's brings out for me two aspects of this analysis that we're going to look at. One is that there's a knowing. There's knowing that there's something right here. There's knowing. And it's not just, as you say, it's not cognitive, it's not intellectual knowing. In fact, intellectual knowing, I'm not saying that intellectual knowing is wrong, by the way. I think that the intellect it has its real uses. We do need to learn to think clearly. But it also has its limitations, and no amount of intellectual knowing can turn into shraddha on its own. It can help, but not on its own. And when there is shraddha, it feels like all the intellectual knowing in the world is sort of not the point, because you know immediately, you know with your heart, almost with your body, you kind of know when something's right. And then what you said is that there was knowing that this is what you were meant to be doing. Because knowing needs to translate into doing. Any experience of value is limited unless it translates into doing. That's perhaps the better way of putting it. Because we can have glimpses of real knowing or real beauty or real being moved by virtue, but it can leave us unchanged in terms of our action. And if it leaves us unchanged in terms of our action, it's had very limited value. What Buddhism says is that then we need to translate this knowing into a doing, and that doing is always a reorientation of our life towards whatever was meaningful. So we reorientate our energies, our volitions, our wanting, and our actions, our behaviour, towards value. Yeah. So shraddha has this knowing aspect to it, but it also has this active aspect, which is about recognising that we can reorientate our lives, and that we're going to, or that we actually do. So it has what's called a volitional aspect, where we will, our will changes, what we want changes, what we do with our energy changes. Yeah. And that then means that shraddha is transformative, and then it becomes of real value. Yeah. Real value. So it's not just being moved by a beautiful image or a scene or some music, and then going home and forgetting about it, as it were. Shraddha follows through, or has an aspect that follows through. Any other thoughts?
For me, it felt a little bit like connecting with something bigger than me, but inside me, but it's not something outside of me.
Yeah.
So it's kind of realising that I'm involved in this.
Yes, yes. And that's really, really important. Both those dimensions are really, really important. One is that it's bigger than us, or at least it's bigger than our normal sense of ourselves. Unless there's something bigger than us, unless there's some sense of something more than my normal sense of myself, then there's nothing that I can aspire to or orientate myself towards. I might as well just stay in my own small, rather comfortable world, if you see what I mean. So yes, shraddha has this sense that there's something more that's somehow bigger than my normal experience. And yet, it also has this sense that that experience of whatever it is, that more, is also my own potential, and is somehow a potential in me. somehow it includes me in a true sense of the word, and that I can move towards it. Yeah, there's this confidence that I can move towards it. So it's not just having a sense that there's something much bigger and that I'm some sort of lowly worm that will never even raise my head towards this. It's not like that. It's more like, yes, there's something vast and sort of infinitely bigger than I am, mm-hmm. and somehow that's my own true potential, and I can move towards that. And that's that combination is really powerful and necessary somehow. Yeah. I think in some traditions, other faith traditions, when you come across the word faith, it's like they don't necessarily embody both of those things. There can be this sense of something higher, usually labelled God, but then you can't become God, because to even think in those terms would be blasphemous. Whereas Buddhism is saying that the Buddha is not only the embodiment of what's highest in the universe, but we can become Buddhas, because that is our own potential too. So that combination in Buddhism is really important. Yeah. So I'm going to move on, but just those three responses have actually brought out practically everything that I want to say. It's really, really lovely to hear, actually, just that I'd like to hear from more of you, but I'm not going to have time to do that. So the first thing that we talked about was metta, and this sense of warmth, you said, and this sense of confidence, even, that you said. And, well, Shraddha has that sort of affective dimension, this emotional aspect, you could say. So could we put up emotional aspect? Mm-hmm. Or emotional dimension, emotional aspect. And then there's... Well, you were talking particularly about knowing that something was true and meaningful. And you, Sarah, were talking about this sense of that being bigger than our ordinary self, our ordinary sense of self. And both of those seem to me to be pointing to this sort of intuitive knowing aspect, that there's some sort of reality or experience that's possible, that's bigger and more true than our normal everyday experience. So Shraddha has this knowing aspect or knowing dimension. And again, I mean something, by knowing I mean something immediate and intuitive. Actually, that knowing dimension starts off as being intuitive, but gradually it turns into experience. So it's not just intuitive, you can know at deeper and deeper levels. And to turn it from intuition to experience, sometimes what we need is we need to use our intellect. So our intellect isn't barred from this sort of knowing. In fact, it's very, very useful. So we use our reasoning. So this knowing aspect can have intuition, it can also have reason, and then it turns into lived experience. Yeah? Lived experience. There's all those kind of ways into this knowing aspect. And then both of you were talking about feeling like you could do something, or that it was your potential, that it was in you somehow, or that you could move towards it. And that aspect is normally called the volitional aspect. It has this aspect where we are involved in this deeper meaning, this higher meaning, and we can move towards it. We want to move towards it. We can orientate our wanting towards it. It's called the longing phase. It's where we can not only respond to something higher, but we long for it and move towards it. So it's our volitional dimension. So if you include our emotional life, if you include this sort of knowing dimension, and then if you include our volitions, that includes the whole of our psyche, that includes all of our mind. Shraddha is in its fullness, it's a response of the total being to value, to truth, to beauty, to something more. So it can be, when all three aspects are involved, a total response of our being. Yeah. But sometimes one aspect or dimension is stronger and leads the way. So I'm just going to pause there and see if there are any questions on that. Yeah.
When you said that from intuition,
yes,
to experience,
yes,
you need an intellect,
yes,
and I wonder, is there, for me, I thought, there is experience also before intuition?
There is. Actually, it's not necessarily in that order.
Oh, okay.
So sorry, yes, I shouldn't have implied that you needed, that it always went in that order. What I meant is that our reason, our capacity to reason, needs to be involved in our response of Shraddha, so that it is our total being. Buddhism isn't telling us that we shouldn't use our reason and our intellect, that somehow all value and meaning is outside of reason, or it is in a certain sense, but reason is a valuable part of our psyche, and it can lead to a clarity that then points to something beyond itself, beyond reason, even. So we need to use our reason. Buddhism isn't anti-reason, that's what I'm trying to say. It's not anti-reason. And in fact, if you hear things in Buddhism or any other tradition that don't fit with your reason, then you should question it. Yeah. Buddhism isn't anti-reason. So it would never say that the earth doesn't go around the sun, for example, or that, you know, it's not round or whatever. It's not anti-reason in that sense, but it says that reason can only take us so far. There is something beyond reason. It's almost like reason becomes the jumping off point for something that catapults us beyond reason. But yes, what I was saying is that we need to use our reason and be prepared to use our intellect. In fact, Shraddha can help us become more clear in our thinking. Sometimes when people talk in a very intellectual way, if you really listen to them, they're muddled. Yeah, they're muddled. They may sound very clever, but they're muddled. And that's because their emotions are muddled. They haven't got a clear orientation in terms of value, and their emotions are sort of muddled. Something like metta and shraddha clarifies our mind, even at that intellectual level. It cuts through things. Yeah. Swear
that,
yeah.
Can I ask you a question? Is it always, the way you describe it seems to suggest that it's always full of metta and like a positive sensation to have this shraddha, but
it gets to the point.
We were trying to invoke feeling that it can come out of crisis.
Yes, it can.
And for example, for me, it was out of a negative situation.
Yeah.
So, and there's a sense of powerlessness and sadness.
Yeah.
And grief and, Is that still qualify for these things?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. But interestingly, metta doesn't always have to be associated with pleasant sensations. You can be feeling metaful and still be in touch with the painful aspect of life. Metta is a quality of openness of heart that can respond with kindness to pleasure and to pain, to joy and to sadness. But Shraddha doesn't always have to feel pleasant. In fact, in a certain sense, Shraddha doesn't always have to manifest as a feeling at all. Sometimes we can overemphasize the feeling aspect of things like metta or Shraddha, whereas there's this volitional aspect as well, both to metta and to Shraddha. So sometimes you might not be feeling very much at all, but you have to look at, what am I doing with my life? What am I doing with my time, with my energy, with my money, with my relationships? What am I doing with my will? And that can sometimes reveal that, oh yes, you are orientating towards meaning and value, even though you don't feel very happy. Yeah. Often that is my experience. I get out of bed, I don't want to meditate. In fact, I don't want to get out of bed. And nevertheless, I eventually do. And in that moment, I don't feel brilliant and metaphorical and warm and expansive, but something still drives me on to get out of bed, to meditate, to do what I know is of value. And that's not just on, that's on a daily basis, actually. So sometimes with Shraddha, you really do have to look at what you're doing, because you may not be feeling great about it, in a certain sense. And the converse can be true as well, can't it? That sometimes people can respond with lots and lots of emotion. And I'm not saying that that emotion is insincere, because it can be very sincere. It can be like there's lots of metta and positivity and love and warmth. But then you ask them to, could you just do the washing up? Or would you just help me with, tidying away after a class or whatever? And all of that disappears. There's no follow-through into action. Yeah, it's all lovely, 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 feeling, but no action. In fact, the action can be in the opposite direction altogether. And I would say that that's not really Shraddha, then. Yeah, Shraddha follows through. It has this volitional dimension. So in a sense, that volitional dimension, what we do with our lives, is the key, is the paramount one. It might not always feel good. Yeah? Skillful and positive in Buddhism doesn't always mean pleasant. It can be actually deeply challenging or unpleasant. If sometimes when you lose somebody through the breakup of a relationship, or somebody dying, or you lose your job even, you might sort of not have wanted that, and it feels unpleasant, but it can open up a space and a perspective in your life that makes you reevaluate and makes you feel more in touch with what's true. Yeah. And then that can be a very positive thing. Yeah. Does that help? Good. Yeah, go on. I'll take one more.
Well, I've got a question, basically. Yeah. It makes perfect sense to me what you're saying, but sort of, I feel that sort of society in general at the moment, sort of like in the postmodern age that we probably live in, basically ignores all of those aspects. It just has a tendency to focus mainly on rationality and sort of like almost like discriminate against any showing sort of like of emotion, or basically sort of what you just described as Shraddha. And sort of,
yeah.
How do you respond to that? Because I find that really hard to sort of like
trying to do that and move, especially the religion aspect, and move towards it, when basically we're living in a society that's essentially, from my point of view, telling us the opposite.
Mm. It's anti-Shraddha, our society, often, isn't it? There's the opposite of Shraddha, which is called Ashraddhya. And if you don't have Shraddha, you have Ashraddhya. It's interesting, this, that the absence of Shraddha is also a thing, as it were. It's what's I guess we could translate as cynicism, as doubt, as undermining, corrosive, negative,
nihilism.
Dismissing,
yeah.
Nihilism, dismissing of value, etc., etc. And the culture that we live in is Ashraddha. It is anti-Shraddha. In many respects, of course, not all respects, because you still have many examples of virtue and value and beauty and people striving for truth. But generally, popular culture doesn't support this. So what then is needed, I think, is for us to put ourselves in conditions which do support this. More and more, find conditions that do support this. Don't necessarily trust and believe the conditions that don't support that, and reorientate where you put your time and energy. So look for supportive conditions until Shraddha is so strong in us that it can survive and even transform adverse conditions. And it can do that. So it's not like you can just, you need to cocoon yourself away from the world. What you do need, though, is supportive contexts to build up this confidence, this trust, this faith, so that then you can stand robust even in situations that don't support that, and even situations that actively undermine this. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, so really important. Yeah, go on.
When we said Shraddha is our capacity to respond to value,
yes.
Does that respond include recognized value? So
yes.
Steps before that.
Yes.
Because my capacity to see value in a particular thing I'm doing.
Yes.
What is that also Shraddha?
Yes, it is. It is. Recognizing value.
My second question would be that I'm deeply suspicious of that capacity of seeing value in
yes.
what I do, because, well, I see a lot of people around me putting value in things that I don't see the value in, who make religions out of motorcycles and money.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And also I might place value in something that is ultimately unethical.
Yes.
An activity or a job or...
yes.
So how do I deal with that?
So that's a really good point, because in a certain sense, what that points to is that we can't always just trust our own whims and our own wants and our own, even our own intuitions can be very wrong. Yeah? So I could put all my value in making as much money as possible and put that as the highest goal that I'm going to set for my life. And, strive for it with all my volition and put all my emotional energy into it as well. From a Buddhist perspective, that would be a waste of my time. It would have been a waste of the energy of my life, in a certain sense. Not that earning money is in itself wrong, and I'm not having a go at earning lots of money. All I'm saying is that when it becomes the highest value, then that's a waste. So, it's not necessarily enough just to trust our own whims and impulses. They can go very wrong. So I think we have to test them against some sort of criterion that's outside of us. Yeah. Now, in the Buddhist tradition, you'd test it against the teachings of the Buddha. That's what you'd do. You could also test it with people that you respect. Of course, that's not necessarily 100% foolproof either, because the people that one might respect might be the ones that are the millionaires already, as it were. So ultimately, I think you need teachings, truth teachings, of some sort that you can test it against. But then you've got this dynamic where you've got a teaching that's outside of you, yeah, and you've got to test your experience against it, and somehow you don't want to lose your own sense of responsibility in that. You don't want to just become gullible to that. At the same time, you want to be open that there might be something to learn here. So I think that that's where we need our intuition and our reason, because it's not yet in our experience. Yeah? We need this intuition and we need our reason. Intuition isn't always enough, and reason on its own sometimes is too limited. Mm-hmm. So we need something that's you know, pretty sort of subtle here. It's difficult because the Buddha's experience of enlightenment isn't our experience, it's not my experience. So the Buddha is saying, Buddhism is saying, that there's an experience that we don't currently have that is possible. So I can't know that experience for sure because it's not my experience yet. And yet, if I completely ignore it, then I'm closed myself off from the potential of ever experiencing it. So what I do is I look at my own experience and I think, do I have some degree, some glimmer in my experience that resonates with what the Buddha says of his experience? The Buddha is said to be completely imperturbable, for example. Nothing would shake his equanimity and his compassion. So do I have some degree of experience of what it's like to feel very grounded and still and confident? And does meditation help that? Well, in my case, it does. And you know, can I deepen that? And so you work from where you are and from the ideal, both. There's something outside of our experience, there's something in our experience which is a reflection of that. And you need the both. Because you're right, if you just go with your experience, you can go very wrong. Buddhism, Sangharakshita has a lovely sort of definition for Shraddha, and he says that it's what's highest in us responding to what's highest in the universe. Is that right? Responding to what's highest in the universe. What's highest in us responding to what's highest in the universe. It's both. It's in us and it's in the universe. And we need the both. So I'm really glad you asked that. That's really good, Tobias. Good. Yeah, good. Now, I just want to touch on Shraddha and spiritual death. In a way, I said something at the start of the class. But I want to just sort of re-emphasize it. In a certain sense, Shraddha leads to an unfolding of experience that takes us all the way to enlightenment. It's said to be the prefiguration of wisdom. So when you have this response of intuitively knowing something that's of value and of meaning and is true, that intuition is a little prefiguration of the Buddha's enlightened wisdom. Shraddha, developed deeply enough, turns into the wisdom of enlightenment. It turns into liberation of the enlightened mind, of the knowing of the enlightened mind. So it's sort of, in a certain sense, everything. Of course, you know, I'm talking in a sort of hyperbolic sense, in a certain sense. But yes, yeah, Shraddha is fundamental to the spiritual life. If we don't have a sense of anything being higher than us or more valuable than our everyday experience, then we can't even start. So it is everything. But also it's important, it's necessary, if we're going to step beyond our current experience, if we're going to step into something unknown, if we're going to have the courage to let go of what's habitual in our lives and say, yes, I'm going to take a step into the unknown, if we're going to move towards spiritual death, then we're going to need an enormous amount of confidence in something beyond the known. Yeah, in confidence in something beyond our current experience. And we're going to need to have confidence that it's very positive. Because if we don't have that confidence, then probably we'll not let go. We'll not let go. So spiritual death takes place in the context of Shraddha. It takes place in the context of Shraddha. And we need to develop Shraddha in a very conscious and active way. So it's not just something that happens to arise, even though it is innate in us. We can consciously cultivate it. And we need it for spiritual death. And unless we're prepared to die spiritually, to let go of the known, then there's no such thing as spiritual rebirth. So let's just pause for a bit and think about how do we cultivate Shraddha? What would help us cultivate this quality of Shraddha? In a way, we've said a little bit about putting yourself in conditions where it can be cultivated, but more specifically, what would help us cultivate it? Oh, who's saying? Yes. Yeah,
I want to say just to sort of meditating on what I cling to.
Right. So say more about that. Well, how would that lead to? How would that lead to this?
I have to be aware of what my habitual thinking, which is about clinging.
Yeah.
And my understanding about what you've been saying is that, that's kind of part of the puzzle. I've got to know where I'm going wrong, so that
sure.
I can go in the right, orient myself towards what
sure.
is the highest in me, the highest in the universe.
Indeed, yeah. You have to actually bring awareness to our current unhelpful habits, don't you? So that there's a sense of how do we move beyond them, or what do I need to let go of, or what do I need to change. So bringing awareness. And meditation's one way in which we bring awareness to our limiting habits, how we limit ourselves. If we can be aware of how we limit ourselves, in that awareness, there's the seeds of going beyond those limits or breaking those habits, or of change, of positive transformation. So in the awareness itself, there's Shraddha. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Did you have something to say? Yes.
Yes, devotion, immersing ourselves in devotion, in puja, in that the ascetic side of our faith.
Yeah.
Remind us of the beauty.
Yeah, yeah. So imagination, devotion, images that are somehow symbolic of these higher values. Can move us. Beauty moves us in a way that sometimes concepts don't touch us. So, yes, devotion, imagination, engagement with images that move us is one way, a very important way. Not the only way, but an important way of cultivating Shraddha. Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be just through standard Buddhist images. Buddhism has got, through its various tradition, a whole pantheon of images that are very potent. And, you know, we've got a shrine here of Vajrapani. And he's a very potent figure. But you can also look for images that move you that are from other traditions or no tradition. Look for images that stir a sense of meaning and value in us and move us because they're beautiful. A lot of Christian art I find very, very beautiful. I'm able, because I didn't have a Christian upbringing, I'm able fairly easily to not read into the Christian art a Christian doctrine. So I can see an annunciation, a beautiful annunciation, say, by Friar Angelico, and feel something of its of spiritual value in that and meaning in that.
Those values that you've had a response to, if you then try and replicate those values in your behaviour, if you then see the response of other people to your behaviour, would that count as, would that sort of reinforce your sense of those values?
It might do, mightn't it? So give me an example of that. I think I know what you mean, but...
Well, if somebody's being particularly honest with you...
Yes.
And you're developing a sense that honesty is a good thing...
Yes.
And so you start being more honest in your relations with others...
Yes.
And you see people's reaction to that honesty, and it's a positive reaction...
Yes.
Then that would help to sort of...
Strengthen and reinforce.
Your conviction that, that honesty is a good thing.
Exactly, that's right. If you change your behaviour... and you notice positive responses from others, and sometimes just positive responses from our own states of mind. Because if we're honest in a situation that is perhaps tempting, where, you know, it's tempting to be dishonest, if we go against that and are honest, we can experience a lightness of mind. Well, there's the karmic fruits of that in the moment. But sometimes, as you say, it comes from other people's response to us, a positive response. And yes, that can really help reinforce skillful behaviour. I think it's really important that. Yeah, really important. Of course, they may not always respond positively, so then it's more challenging. Yeah. Ashok.
I'm a little bit worried in the way that we are talking about death, because... my experience of death is for people around me that die, is horrific. It fills me with horror.
Mm.
Even the word fills me with horror.
Mm.
It's difficult for me to... I mean, I can see that Shraddha and a kind of longing can be channeled in a very creative, progressive way.
Mm.
But the horror of it, at the same time, is so massive.
Mm.
It's just so massive.
Mm.
It's difficult to see how Shraddha can overcome that level of horror.
Yes, it is. I think it's sort of completely unreasonable. It's completely unreasonable. Because the extent of the suffering in the world is horrific. And Buddhism doesn't try and gloss over that. It doesn't try and say, no, it's all right, really. No, it really is horrific. That the pain and the suffering in the world, the pain of being human and having a body and being mortal, let alone the cruelties that we can inflict on each other, are horrific. They're horrific. And in a certain sense, Buddhism says, look at that starkly. Look at that in an unvarnished way. Yeah? Look at that as it really is, but look at it with a heart full of metta and Shraddha. Because if we don't have Shraddha and metta in our experience, then when we look at such pain and suffering, when we look at death and all sorts of suffering in life, what happens is that we close down. We either we close down and become hardened and defended, or we shrink away in horror. But either way, there's not then a creative engagement. if we have metta and we have shraddha, then what we can do is look at and stay with the pain of the situation and find a creative response to it. Because that pain isn't somehow all of the experience. Shraddha and metta point to something beyond, in a way, all conditioned suffering. There is the possibility of liberation from conditioned existence and all the pain that goes with that. If there wasn't a way out, then in a certain sense, to be encouraged to look at pain is just unhelpful. Yeah, we might as well all switch the telly on and have a stiff drink if there isn't some alternative. But what Buddhism's saying is that no, there is truth and beauty and love and value that if you become more and more orientated towards can lead you beyond the very nature of conditioned existence, that our mind can be liberated from that. Yeah. So then that, it doesn't mean that all pain, conditioned existence disappears, but our response to it changes. And the Buddha's response is one of compassion. That's what the enlightened mind, how the enlightened mind sees conditioned existence. So I'm going to just take one more and then we're going to have to end. Yeah.
Quick question just about shraddha. What's the function of shraddha in love between two people? I guess I'm thinking primarily of what you might call romantic love, but it could be love between two people that see value in each other. Is that a necessary condition in the Buddhist conception?
I wouldn't say that romantic love was a necessary condition, but metta.
No, sorry, I meant shraddha.
Is.
Would shraddha be a necessary condition?
Into that romantic love, or into that love?
Just a love, love that's valued and seems to be valued.
Yeah. It might be there. It might be there, but it might not be there. And I think it would depend on whether that love, how clear it was, how clear-sighted it was. Because sometimes love can be quite clear-sighted and you're seeing the other person as they are and you're responding to the potential and the virtue and the goodness in them and you're loving them for it. And then, in a certain sense, there's a response to value as embodied in another person. And that would be a bit like shraddha. It would be a response to value in another person. Romantic love can also famously not actually see the other person at all, but see a projection of our imagined ideal of that other person. And that's somehow a creation of our own fantasy imagination. And then, in a way, it's delusion rather than shraddha, if you see what I mean.
I suppose the test would be what happened if that person decided to go and do their own thing.
Yeah.
If shraddha was there, you would feel, well, I suppose, joy and happiness.
You would, yeah. Yeah.
If it wasn't.
Yeah. If they decided that they didn't, you know, want to be in a romantic relationship anymore with you, and you could still love them for their virtues, then that would be the shraddha. Yeah.
That's quite depressing, actually.
Well, on that depressing note, I find it very heartening somehow. So look, we're going to leave. Well, it's 9:45, so it's quite late. So what I'm going to suggest is that we end there, at least if you want to.